So this still is the second day of our retreat here at the Franciscan Center on patience. And hopefully in the last 24 hours you've had opportunity to meditate, reflect on the teachings that have been shared with you so far. As you probably know, or maybe you don't know, in the Buddhist tradition, going back to the Buddha, it was always said, first you hear the teaching, then you reflect on the teaching, then you practice the teaching. So it's not just instant digestion. We hear the teachings, we read the teachings, then we need to digest them. It's like digesting our, you know, chewing our food, so it's digestible. So we need to reflect on these teachings. Do they make sense? Do they accord with reality? Do they accord with my experience? If we do that and really chew on them and try to understand them and to see their applicability, then practicing them will be much easier and come more naturally. But if we don't do that, again, they're never owned. Just the same way, if we don't chew our food well, they will not be digested, and we won't get the full nutrition. You know, they'll just pass through us, so to speak. And many of us have been exposed to lots of teachings over the years, reading them and hearing them, but they haven't taken. And we have to ask ourselves, well, why haven't they taken? And that's often because we don't really take enough time to really engage with them in this reflective way, so we're convinced. You know, not by some external authority, but we're convinced by our own understanding, our own experience. Yeah, this makes sense. This is true. Patience and anger. As I said yesterday, we tend in our society, we have a lot of anger. We have a lot of anger. Anger nationally. Politicians, they're all angry at each other. Groups are angry at each other. Individuals are angry at each other. Family members are angry at each other. It's chronic. It's a chronic condition in our society. And as was said yesterday, if it's not expressed as full-blown anger, it is this constant frustration and irritation. People frustrated with their lives, frustrated with people, irritated. You know, and again, it was described yesterday, and perhaps you heard about it during the day. A lot of it is cultural. You know, we are always in a hurry. We always have so many things to do, don't we? And so anything that gets in the way becomes a source of frustration or irritation to us. It's unconscious. Right, and so we have to understand that even without good clear teachings and understanding, there's an energy in our culture that is always pushing us forward. Right, it's sort of like I don't know if any of you comes to mind. There was this, I think it might have been a silent movie, Modern Times, with Charlie Chaplin. And there's a great scene in there where he works on an assembly line, and he has these kind of wrenches, and he's all day long he's going like this, you know, with a little piece. He just stands there going like this. And then finally one day he just cracks, and he just can't stop doing this, and he's kind of running amok, just kind of, trying to, twist everything. I think that was a social commentary that there's an energy that we don't even realize we carry, that's always speeding us up And so any little thing is frustrating, and we bring it into our own relationships. It's like, but anyhow, I mean, I think it's important that we understand our culture, both the positives, but also the negatives. And so the other important point that I made yesterday was, without a spiritual path, without a philosophy of life, without real clear guidelines and understanding how to approach life, you see, that's what we lack. So lacking that, we are left to the opposite, which is dealing with things case by case. So we go through the day, and things happen, right? Good things happen, bad things, whatever, things happen, life happens. And we are always just reacting to the situation, sometimes good, sometimes bad, depending on our mood, depending on what's going on, depending on lots of causes and conditions. But that's how most people live life. Now, when you're living life in that unconscious way, what is driving you? Well, your past. Future hasn't happened. Present's unfolding right now. So we're always being driven by our past, right? And for many of us, our past has been primarily conditioned by others, right? And our response to others. And a lot of those others were not the healthiest things, the healthiest people, the healthiest situation to really bring out the natural wisdom and intelligence, that we have within us. So when we're living our life on automatic pilot, right? When our default is just, reacting to situations unconsciously, just whatever happens, understand, it's not that way at all. What's happening is we are responding from our past conditioning. And that will never change unless we change. Okay? Because that just has its own energy. Years and years, decades of decades of thinking a certain way and reacting a certain way and perceiving things a certain way, we don't even realize that we are approaching life in every situation through that frame, with that filter, whatever you want to call it. And it's unconscious. We don't know it. So we're constantly reinforcing these ancient patterns within ourselves, good or bad, right? And we don't even realize that this is the energy that we're always manifesting. We think we're self-directed conscious beings, but we're not. We are unconscious beings driven by our conditioning from the past. So at some point, and maybe that's why we're all here together today, we kind of look at that. We do something that most people in our society don't do or don't have the time to do. Because again, our culture is a conspiracy in keeping us what? Busy. And if it's not keeping us busy, it's keeping us what? Entertained. Right? I mean, it's and that's the deal. Right? We work, what's the American way? Work all week, play all weekend. Isn't that, right? Right? I mean, that's the deal. As my 4-year-old grandson says, fun times. Well, again, most of us have not grown up. We still are looking for the fun times. So can you see we just get in this pattern. And to have the ability to step back from our life, from our situation, even from our conditioning, and to really see what's going on takes effort in our society. Right? It's just not, nobody's doing it. I would imagine for those of you who are here, the first retreat, you might have told people what you were doing, and they might have gone, what? Let me get this straight. 3 days, in silence, no phone, no intern, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like torture for most people. It's like, you know, incomprehensible why anybody would want to do this. Again, I mean, you know, there are obviously people who don't think that, but that's how skewed our culture is, you know. You know why? Because nobody wants us to stop. You know. It's like, isn't everybody having fun here? You know, it's like, you know, nobody wants us to stop and go, no, this is not fun at all. This is kind of meaningless. This doesn't go anywhere. You know, like, what am I doing with my life? Is that clear? So we have to understand that in our culture, to step out, to look deeply, take some effort, take some courage, because it is not reinforced by our culture, our society. If anything, it is seen as, for many people, as what? Abnormal. You know, what we're doing is abnormal. Right? If you take 3 or 4 days off from your life, from work, you should be doing what? Having fun. Right? I mean, you know, then everybody goes, oh, well, you went to Disney for 3 days. How, you know what I mean? Like, that's normal. You see? You kept yourself entertained. And I'm not saying anything negative, you know what I'm saying? But that's our culture. And the idea that we're stepping back and doing something meaningful, and you know, is like so antithetical to the culture. That is why, in a certain way, these days, to have a spiritual practice and to follow a spiritual path, you know, you need a community, right? You know, you need, you need to be nurtured by a different set of values than are being proclaimed and lived by in the mass culture. So, left to our own devices, we just live our life case by case, moment to moment, in the wrong way. Not the moment to moment in a mindful, awakened, clear way, but a moment to moment just reacting from our conditioning unconsciously. And then, like I said yesterday, when we do have a problem, you know, we take care of it as a problem, right? I have an anger problem. I'll get some anger management. I have an anxiety problem, I'll go get some anxiety management, right? Or some medication. I have a depression, I'll go get some depression. You know what I mean? I have a relationship, I'll go get some relationship, you know. So we are, again, still dealing with these things case by case, problem by problem. And you might have found, for those of you who've kind of gone that route, which is, again, I was a therapist for 30 years, you know, that can be a helpful route. But you may wonder why it is, just when you've solved this problem and this part of your life is going better, all of a sudden over here, you know, it's like this one pops up. You know? Have you noticed that? Now, why is that? That's like there's nothing wrong with you. It's just, it's a bigger issue. The bigger issue is, how am I approaching life, you see? How am I approaching life? How am I approaching my moment-to-moment experience? How do I understand what's going on here? You know what I mean? These are like big questions, but they're not that big. I mean, but they, you know, if you have a context, and I said yesterday to have a spiritual path is to give you a context, give you a bigger picture. So when things happen, they happen in a context. You understand why they're happening. If you don't have that context, you can't have understanding. The understanding will be, you know, she's being a bitch, right? He's being an asshole, forgive my language. But I mean, you know, that's how we do it. Right? It's all situation by situation, and it's just distorted. We don't see what's really going on here. Any questions about that before we jump into the teachings? Yeah, it's all kind of simple. So, I am reading from Shantideva. And actually, I won't spend much time. Way of the Bodhisattva, one of the great classic Buddhist texts, really sets forth the whole Buddhist path from beginning to end in verse. I mean, it's just beautiful and profound. Shantideva was an 8th century Indian Buddhist master. Not much is known about him, but he left this text behind. And the way of the Bodhisattva is this very unique development in Buddhism in India that united what are often in religious or spiritual paths separate. He united the path of awakening, the path of cultivating wisdom, and I'll explain more about that, with the path of compassion. Okay. They're not two different things. Because the fundamental movement of the Bodhisattva, and Bodhisattva means enlightened being, following the path of an enlightened being, which means following the path of becoming an enlightened being. That's what this text is about, all the teachings that help us develop that and become that. It begins with compassion. Compassion means I am present to my own suffering and the suffering of the world, the suffering of my family, my friends, my society, the world. I see the omnipresence of self-created human suffering. And I see the inability of most beings to really know how to free themselves from their suffering, including myself. So therefore, I will undertake this path of awakening, this path of transformation, not only to bring benefit to myself and rid myself of suffering, but to benefit all beings. So it unites this incredible altruistic vision of ending the suffering and freeing all beings from their suffering with my own path of personal liberation. So it's a very profound path. And one of the chapters is called Patience. And I'm not going to be able to read the whole thing, but I'm going to skip around a little bit and use it as an opportunity for us to look at various things. He begins, all the good works gathered in 1,000 ages, such as deeds of generosity, you can think of every good virtuous deed you've ever done, a single flash of anger shatters them. A single flash of anger shatters them. No evil is there similar to anger. No austerity to be compared with patience. Steep yourself therefore in patience in various ways insistently. Those tormented by the pain of anger never know tranquility of mind. Strangers they will be to every pleasure. They will neither sleep nor feel secure. Perhaps there are people in this room who have been the object of someone's anger. What is that like? What is that like? Is it good? No. Painful. Many of us, years or decades later, still experience the results of being the recipient of someone's anger. Right? It could be You know, it's, and it manifests in many ways. There are people who are very angry and they don't say anything, but you kind of feel their anger. It's very uncomfortable to be around those kinds of people, you know? Some of it, the anger is generated by words, cutting words, demeaning words, right? And some of it, as you know, it becomes physical. People use their, you know, it becomes aggressive. But the cause is all anger, and it, in a flash, like he says, it destroys all the goodness, right? You may think you have a good relationship with this person, your father, your mother, your partner, your spouse, you know what I mean, all kinds of people. And in that moment of anger, when you are the recipient of anger, where's all that goodness that person might have in the past? Gone. Did you know the experience I'm talking about? It's gone. And for many, it may never be repaired. Is that true? For many, it may never be repaired, even though, and if it's, you know, and then if it's consistent over time, even though the person 90%, 95% of the time may be okay, that 5% of being the recipient of their anger can destroy that relationship. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? Okay, so we need to kind of get it now. Have we ever been the giver to another of our anger? Have we?
Yes.
Yeah. When we are angry, when we're really mad, how does that feel? Well, I mean, in the moment it feels good. It's powerful. It's a powerful, you know. But if they say, do you feel good? No. A lot of hurt, a lot of, right? And when we are angry, have we not done and said things that have hurt people? Is there anybody here who doesn't know what I'm talking about? And even to people that we care about, to people that we love, right? Have we not been the committers of that? So we know. Both as the receiver of anger and of the giver of anger, that it is a very harmful relationship. It's very, very harmful to relationships and to oneself. We need to meditate and reflect on this, so we get over this illusion that somehow anger is okay, because this person really did something that, you know, is worthy of my anger. Once you say those words, even though later on you may apologize, forgive me, I was angry. Anybody ever say those words? Anybody ever have somebody say that to them? And you may say, okay, I forgive you. But you don't, do you? No, you don't. We got to be honest, we don't. Because that, it goes deep. Right? So this is why, in the Buddhist tradition, of all the emotional afflictions, anger has a special chapter. All the others are just called emotional afflictions, you know. Anger gets its own chapter. Why is that? Because of the harm it can do, right? For a lot of afflictive emotions and mind states, they really just harm us. You know, I mean, we may be racked with worry, or we may be really depressed. You know what I mean? But I mean, that'll spill out. But mostly, it's harming. You know, it's doing harm to ourselves. Anger, because of the nature of the energy of anger, can do harm. And of course, you know, I mean, I mean, think about child abuse and physical abuse and spousal abuse and wars. And I mean, it's, what's that all about? Anger. Anger. So we have to really stop and heed these words, what he's being said here. Those tormented by the pain of anger never know tranquility of mind. Again, in the Buddhist path, since the object of the kind of psychological system of positive and negative, wholesome and unwholesome mind states is really based on what are those mind states that are supportive of a calm and clear and open mind, because that kind of mind is very supportive of a meditative and a spiritual awakening. And what are those mind states which are the opposite? Okay. So afflictive mind states are basically mind states that disturb the fundamental tranquility and clarity of the mind. And there is no cloud that disturbs and covers the natural goodness of the mind than what? Have you ever said anything in anger that you almost immediately regret? Right? Yeah. It's very dangerous, anger. And again, we need to reflect on this. Now, I'm moving ahead. Getting what I do not want and all that hinders my desire. In discontent, my anger finds its fuel. From this it grows and beats me down. Very simple. Okay? So as you know, Buddhism, and I'm just saying this because I know many of you are new on retreat, and I really don't know how many of you are familiar with Buddhist philosophy and psychology. But Buddhism is not based on any kind of theological system. It is not based on any kind of a divine revelation. Okay, so Buddhism is different in from a lot of our Western religious traditions, because Buddhism is really comes out of one. It begins with the Buddha. And when he was disturbed by what was going on in life and wanted to understand what was going on and resolve it so he could be happy, he looked deeply into life and he looked deeply into his own mind and experience. Okay. So it is a path where we look deeply into life for answers. And one of the things, this is not a retreat on basic Buddhism, but the Buddhist, his first formulation was called the Four Noble Truths. Maybe you've heard of the Four, it's kind of like basic Buddhism, but it's very profound. Because he says, if there's a problem, and you want to solve the problem, what do? See, in our way, it's like, I just go solve the problem. I just jump in and solve the problem. The Buddha didn't say that. He said, step number two is causation. What's causing it? See, if you just deal with it at the symptom level, you'll never get it. And that's what we do. We're always managing the symptoms. Okay? But really, what's causing it? Why do people get angry? Getting what I do not want. The opposite of that would be not getting what I want. All that hinders my desire. Right? So, we are a bundle of what? Desire, wants, needs. Right? From wanting to get to the line quickly, to wanting to get through traffic quickly, to wanting people to be a certain way, to wanting my needs met, my wants met, my life to turn out the way I want it to be, right? That is our fun, that's a powerful energy. Most of us live in the world of self. I, me, mine. And all our interactions are life, whether we're home, at work, with people, friends, whatever it is, for most of us, to one degree or another, The stance is always what? What's in this for me? How can this person meet my needs? How can I get what I want? So you see, the stronger that is, the stronger that energy, you know, of wanting and needing and must have, if that is the way we enter life, well, the problem, as you've learned, is what's the problem in life? Doesn't always go our way. The whole world is not set up to meet our needs, which is a shame. Right? I mean, really? I mean, ideally, wouldn't that be a wonderful world? Think about it. Right? Everybody's there in my life to meet my needs. You laugh, but this is the way we operate in life. Because when they don't meet our needs, when we don't meet our needs, for all you who are laughing at the preposterous nature that the whole world should be there to meet our needs, we laugh, and yet the truth is, when people don't meet our needs and things don't go our way, we get what? Angry. Hurt. Disappointed. Frustrated. Isn't that true? Yes. And we think the problem is out there. The problem is the way we are approaching life. As Shanti Deva said, this is the eighth century. So for those of you who think things are getting better, or somehow, you know, we are developing as human beings, this is eighth century knowledge. This is eighth century wisdom. Right? In a feudal, agricultural base society of 8th century India. That should be a wake-up call. You know, human beings, unfortunately, have not progressed much. Still dealing with the same issues. And even though these teachings have been available for thousands of years, still, we are, well, again, here in the West, they haven't been available. Luckily, they are becoming. Getting what I do not want and all that hinders my desire, in discontent my anger finds its fuel. From this it grows and beats me down. So again, when we talk psychologically, we would say kind of a low level to a high level of dissatisfaction, discontent is epidemic in the minds of our society. Would you grant me that? You know, just, how's work? Well, you know, how's your relationship? You know what I mean? There's this low level of dissatisfaction. Somehow we think what? What do we think? Come on, own up to it. What do we think? It should be better. I mean, isn't that true? It should be better. It's never, ever quite good enough, this life. Right? Right, our life, our job, our partner, our financial situation, our house. I mean, it's like endless discontent. Dissatisfaction. We're always looking outside for the next something that we think will finally bring us contentment. Right? Dissatisfaction means we seek what? Satisfaction. Discontent means we seek to be content, don't we? So we're always looking out there for the solution. And again, we talked yesterday, and hopefully in the meditations you've learned, the problem is where? Discontent and dissatisfaction is not in the job. Discontent and dissatisfaction is not in your situation. Discontent and dissatisfaction are mind states in your mind. My mind. Is that clear? It doesn't dwell anywhere else. Anybody disagree with me? I mean, speak up. This is big. Because everybody in this room is running their life on a totally different principle. Right? The problem in my life is life. Rather than the problem in my life is me. Because dissatisfaction, discontent, unhappiness are mind states. In whose mind? My mind. Does anybody disagree with that or not see that? This is important. I'm not just... On the other hand, contentment, satisfaction, well-being are also mind states that arise in our mind. Now, who's in control of your mind? Yeah, you see, I want you to maybe during the day, you know, I want you to look at that. Who's in control of your mind? It, or even scarier, is there anybody in control of your mind? You know, it's like, you know, when you have those nightmares, you know, with a, you're in the bus or something, and you look up front, and you see there's nobody in the driver's seat. That's called what? A nightmare. Well, many of us maybe would, you know, is there anybody driving? And as I said earlier, if there's nobody driving your life, your conditioning is driving your life. That's what's, you know, there is something driving it, but it's unconscious conditioning. Having a spiritual life and a spiritual direction, a spiritual path, means you're willing to step into the driver's seat. You know where you want to go. You know, you have your hands on the wheel, and you're driving. I mean, it sounds so simple. Right? We all took driver's ed. For me, it's been many years, but kids still take driver's ed in school? No? They do. Oh, okay. So, right. Thank you. Right. So again, right? They didn't let us get into the car until we took driver's ed. But we get into this life of ours without a clue, and we just start driving. Right? Now again, if we were fortunate that we had, you know, wise, good parents and family and teachers and good examples, right? We might have done okay. But many of us did not have that, right? So we are, you know, that's what's driving us. So come, and again, I'm skipping around. So this is, but again, but please meditate on this, you know, today. I mean, this is important. You know, what causes me to be angry? You see, rather than going case by case anger management, it's not an anger problem. The anger problem is a self problem, because the self is endlessly wanting and needing and expecting their needs and wants all to be met, and thinks the world, the people in the world, are there just to meet my needs, to say the right thing, right? To do the right thing for who? For me. And so we have to see this grandiose egocentricity that all of us, underneath our niceness, underneath our goodness, to one degree or another, are operating in the world that way. And we need to see, what does that lead to? What is the cause of my anger, my irritation? And you will see, it's like we're seeing here in two lines, it's very simple. I think the fascinating thing to me is, at the same time that we want the world to operate the way we want it to operate, right? At the same time, and we hold the world and the people in our life to such standards, right? At the same time, when we screw up, we expect the world to be what? Forgiving and understanding. I mean, can you see the double standard? Right? When you screw up, I'm going to make you pay for it. When I screw up, be understanding and forgiving. Sound familiar? I mean, there it is. Right? It's hypocritical. I mean, it's something. Right? But can you see? And we don't even know. We can't step back and see, oh, that's what I'm doing. Not going to forgive that one. That was a big one. Beyond the pale of forgiveness. I'm going to make you pay for it, right? But when it's reversed, please understand me. So come what may, I'll not upset my cheerful happiness of mind. Dejection never brings me what I want. My virtue will be warped and marred by it. Now this next line, I mean, I think that's a commitment, you see. Underline this, I mean, this is the sixth chapter, underline in the early chapters, is this sense of aspiration and intention in life, you know, which quite simply could mean, how do I want to show up, right? Very personal. How do I want to show up in life? What kind of person do I want to show up in life? Right? It's very personal. You know, am I willing to consciously set these kinds of intentions for myself? And he says, so when he says, come what may, I'll not upset my cheerful happiness of mine, it's like saying, I'm making a commitment. It's like an alcoholic or a drug addict or something who says one day, what? Yeah, enough. I'm not going to do it again. You know, I don't care how bad I feel. I don't care what's going on. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drug again. Right? That's a commitment. Doesn't mean it's always going to be easy. Right? Doesn't mean I'm not going to have the impulse. You know what I mean? But my commitment is I'm not going to do it. When you don't do it, then you're forced to what? Deal with what's going on inside you. You see? Which is often not pleasant. Much easier to take the drink. Much easier to lash out. Much harder to go, you know, what is disturbing my inner contentment? What is disturbing my peace of mind right now? You know, I walked into the store, I was in a, you know, good mood. All of a sudden, irritated, frustrated. Right? Gee, the day was going good. All of a sudden, frustration, anger, irritation, disappointment. Do we see those as disturbing our inner happiness or not? Dejection never brings me what I want, but my virtue will be warped and marred by it. Now then he says something which is, for some of you, will seem very familiar. This is 8th century. This is where it comes from. If there's a remedy, it's so rational. It's so completely rational. Please pay attention. And you know this already. If there's a remedy when trouble strikes, what reason is there for dejection? If there is no help for it, what use is there being glum? Anybody know, ever hear the Serenity Prayer they use in AA? Sound familiar? God grant me the, you know, to serenity, to
accept the things I cannot change.
Okay, so this is a variation, can you see? But this is what he's saying. You know, very simple. Right? When trouble strikes, you know, when something arises, some kind of difficulty, some kind of challenge, some kind of anything, right? if there's something that can be done about it, right, then there's no reason to be down, right, to be dejected. You know, just implement the remedy, which is a positive thing. Somebody acts in a certain way, doesn't act and says, you know, is there a remedy? Often the remedy is what? Talk to them. Share with, you know, communicate. Right? There's a remedy here. Give it time. Another, you know, it's another remedy. You know, if there's lots of, every situation, if there's something that can be done, then do it. And the energy of doing it is positive energy, isn't it? Right. If there's nothing that can be done, then just accept it. That's, I mean, you've come to that conclusion. There's nothing can be done. This is a situation. You know, somebody said, how do you handle being in a restrictive and demeaning work environment where you feel imprisoned and want to get out of? How to cultivate a happy mind when there is anything but? I mean, this is a good example, right? I go to work. Turns out the work environment there is not what? The way I would like it to be. Okay, let's just be clear. Could be other people think it's a great work environment. True. I mean, we have to understand that it's personal. Right? Somebody else might think this is heaven. Right? And you, because of who you are, think this is incredibly restrictive, demeaning, whatever. Okay? So we have to understand that this is coming from me. Okay. Now, you know, the question is what? Is this a situation that has some remedies? Or not. You know, I remember years ago when I used to be, you know, did marital therapy. I mean, people come in and just go, you know, they come, God, just describing this horrible relationship, right? And after listening a while, I'd say, well, why don't you just leave them? You know, just leave them. I used to see some people, they'd come and describe their family situation. I say, you know, I got an idea for you. Why don't you go home tonight, clean out the bank account, pack a bag, you know, and go to Mexico and start over. Sounds horrible at home, you know. Now, why would I do that? Because you know what they would do now? They'd say to me, oh hold on a minute. You know, I can't do that. You know, I can't do that. Oh, you see, then we need to talk about how you can live in that environment and change it or accept it. You see? You know, that's why I would say to the person, yeah, gee, he sounds like a horrible human being, just leave him. And then she would say, or he would say, well, I'm not ready for that yet. Okay. Well, no, okay. Well, now, then let's talk about, you know, what kind of remedies there are, what needs to be accepted. Then let's talk about this. Is that clear? And that's the answer to this. You know, if you're in a situation that is workable, you know, do what you can to change it, you know, within the grounds. If for whatever reason this is it for now and you're not ready to make a change, then you need to kind of look at your attitude, because that's where the suffering is. Where's the suffering coming from? Me. And we need to understand that that's the only place the suffering's coming from. We talked yesterday about prison, you know, and for some people, prison is hell, and for some people, fewer people, prison is an opportunity to heal and transform. I mean, that's just the truth. And if people can heal and transform in prison, i.e., hellish conditions, you know, most of us are not living like that. If there's a remedy when trouble strikes, what reason is there for dejection? If there is no help for it, what use is there being glum? And we are professionals in glumness. Right? When you're a child, it's called sulking. Remember anybody here used to be a sulker? Pouting, yeah. But, you know, it's sort of like, just kind of glum, poor me. Right? And we kind of what? Kind of wallow in it. I mean, it's a free country, right? If you want to wallow in glumness, go around pouting all day, right? You're not going to be arrested. It's not against the law. But it is an unhappy mind state. You know, why do it? Can anybody give me a good reason for being glum? Isn't that funny? And yet we do it, don't we? But when we step back and go, yeah, is there any reason, good reason, for staying glum all the time? You're going to stick up for glumness? Good.
I don't actually. I'm just saying, if I'm being glum, or especially someone in my family, it's because I don't want to be a target. Because when you're going around happy, sometimes you end up, you know, people might present the fact that you're so happy and they're not. And so now you somewhat have a target on your back. But if you're glum, then people leave you alone.
Well,
there's a good thing he doesn't want to tell anybody because he doesn't want people to be jealous of him.
Yeah, okay.
So he just hides it in his little glum state.
Well, that's kind of sad, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, so Brian's giving me, yeah, so, so Tara, I love these examples people bring up. So Tara, she's talking about an example in a family where being happy brings negativity toward you, so sort of being glum and a little down sort of keeps you under the radar. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I kind of get that. I mean, you know, if you're around people that are going through a difficult time and you're just kind of whistling and everything's wonderful, that's probably not very nice, is it? Right? So I can so on the other hand, if it's, you know, it may not be that way with your father. But, yeah, so, I mean, obviously, yeah, you don't want to make people fail bad. But on the other hand, you know, if we become glum too, then what message are we giving them? Right? You know, that glumness is the way. You know, somebody's got to point out in a very skillful, compassionate way, guys, you know, there is another way to be. We can be happy for one another. Try that one, you know? And again, some of this stuff is cultural. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of stuff here, you know, that we can't get into. But yeah, it's very interesting. Good. Don't be glum. There's nothing that does not grow light through habit and familiarity. Putting up with little cares, I'll train myself to bear with great adversity. Don't I see that this is so with common irritations, bites and stings of snakes and flies, experiences of hunger and thirst, and painful rashes on my skin? It's a very powerful teaching, especially for Americans, because we are so used to what? Ease and comfort. You know, you go to other cultures, other parts of the world, life is difficult. Right? Life is difficult. Right? Life is really difficult. Right? Life is awfully difficult in many parts of the world. Is that true? Just surviving. Dealing with war, violence, I mean, just endless, you know, famine, hunger. Life is difficult. Poverty. and we get frustrated with what? Traffic. Having to wait online for 5 minutes or 2 minutes. So this is sort of what I was saying yesterday about, you know, don't just look at the anger. Look at the irritation, the frustration, the little stuff. Because the little stuff may be going on throughout the day, right? But we don't see it. And so it's very interesting. He said, there's nothing that does not grow light through habit and familiarity. Putting up with little cares. I'll train myself to bear, you know, if we can't deal with minor setbacks, how are we going to deal with the big stuff? I mean, this is a very personal question for all of us, right? Because there are big things that happen in life. You know, big diseases, big sickness, big financial reversals, big death, big accidents, right? Some people talking about the end of the world, you know, sustainability. There's some big things out there, right? And if we can't deal, you know, with the bites of insects, if we can't deal with a little headache, if we can't deal with a little discomfort, right? You know, they're in Florida, you know, there are people who come in, and if the AC is not turned all the way down, like, to, you know, 60, if it's they immediately what? They act as if what? They're being tortured. Right. Crank up that AC. Phew. People get in cars, you know, it's a little warm. It's like immediately got to crank up the AC. Because why? Because in this moment, I'm a little uncomfortable. I mean, that's all it is. I mean, there are places in the world where the temperatures get up to 120, 130, and the heat can be quite negatively impact you. Okay? Nobody ever died from being a little warm in the car. Is that true? Yeah. And yet we act as if what? Got to get rid of this one. And then we wonder why we can't deal with bigger problems in life. So he's really saying, it's something very interesting, he's saying we need to train ourselves. How do we train ourselves? Begin with the little things. You know, begin with waiting online at Publix. Begin with traffic. Begin with the little minor irritations. Learn, you know, can I deal with that with ease, without getting upset? Then work your way up. Build the strength. There's another chapter in generosity, and he's great. He goes, well, you know, if you're like a very miserly person, right? He said, why don't you begin with, you know, put something like a piece of fruit in your left hand and give it to your right hand. I mean, he actually says that. He's like, kind of get some practice, you know. I mean, your left hand is different than your right hand. It does have its, you know, its separate life, you know. Or, you know, have your left hand, you know, maybe massage your right hand and have your right hand, you know, kind of begin to, you know, build up this more generous spirit. And, you know, start small. But there's some wisdom. And, you know, that's how we train, right? In any skill, anything we learn, we always start, you know, if you're learning an instrument, you have to start skills. If you're, you know, doing muscles, you have to kind of start with your lowest weight. So, I mean, that's, and we understand that, right? I mean, we always begin at the bottom. We, you know, most of us at 5 years old did not enter college. We had to, unfortunately, enter kindergarten and sort of build up, right? Build up our mental muscle and our social skills muscle. This is good advice in terms of, you know, developing this capacity to deal with things not going our way. I think that's why so many people are annoyed by bugs and mosquitoes, right? Because there's this whole universe of insect life that don't really relate to us, either as a source of food or something. I'm not, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's outrageous. You know, many of are outraged that this bee is flying around us. It's, right? It's like, or this ant is crawling up our leg. I mean, we're just outraged. Because in our world, what? It's all about me, and, you know, the fact that there's other whole realms of insects who just kind of have their own world, their own rules, their own way of, it's like, you know, incomprehensible to us. We want to wipe them out. You know, it begins with them, but soon we're wiping out other people, so we need to make sure our compassion is always alive. Now we're going to take it a little deeper, okay? We have a little time. And this is really where we're getting to the heart of Shantideva's, where I said to you, it's not about cultivating patience, it's about cultivating understanding. Patience comes out of understanding. He says, I am not angry with my bile and other humors. So this is he's talking about a medical system in India where people saw the causes of disease in these various aspects of the body. Okay. So he's saying, I am not angry with my bile and other humors, fertile source of my suffering and pain. So why should living beings give offense? They likewise are impelled by circumstance. Okay? So, if you have a headache, are you angry at your head for having a headache? Nobody's angry at their head. Not usually. Just checking. If you have a sore throat, are you angry at your throat? Just going on and on, telling everybody about this horrible throat you have, and you can't believe it's causing you discomfort? No? Oh, you are? Okay. Well, it's a little silly, isn't it? Right? I know, but are you angry? You know, if you have a stomach ache, are you angry at your stomach for having an ache?
I'm angry that I probably ate something.
Well, that's something else, but you're not angry at your stomach, are you? Why not? Why not? Because your stomach is not the cause of it's what you ate is the cause, right? So what he's saying is when we have pain or discomfort in our body, we don't get mad at the body part. If you have a heart attack, you know, do you rail against the heart? I can't believe this heart had an attack. Hold on, why are you laughing? Is it so silly? It is kind of silly. All right, but he's going somewhere with this. So why should living beings give offense? They likewise are impelled by circumstances. So this is a key teaching, which if you get, it will change your relationship to the way things are operating in the world. If you don't get it, you will continue. This idea that things, why do things arise? Because, in Buddhism we say, because of causes and conditions. Why is Brian the way he is? Well, if we understood Brian's causes and conditions, we'd say, oh, I understand why Brian is the way he is. He is the product of his causes and conditions. Okay, if we want to understand Lindsay, why she does this and doesn't do that, we would say, oh, Lindsay is the way she is because of her causes and conditions. Is that clear? The causes and conditions, the historical forces of which there are many, which created her. Like you said, when your stomach hurts, you're not mad at your stomach because you're looking, you understand, my stomach hurts because of what I ate. Right? You looked at the cause. You don't blame that which is the receiver of the cause. This is very important to see this in this intelligent way. So, why should living beings give offense? They likewise are impelled by circumstance. Although they are unlooked for, undesired, these ills afflict us all the same, and likewise, though unwanted and unsought, defilements nonetheless insistently arise. So for those of you who nodded affirmatively before, that you in the course of your life have given vent to anger. Remember those of you who nodded your head? I think it was pretty much everybody. Did you very consciously say to yourself, my response to the situation is I am now going to generate anger? Is that the way it happened? No. How did it happen? Like that. Unlooked for, undesired. These ills afflict us all the same. So that's what he's saying. Okay? In the same way, we, without a thought, right, immediately the anger flares up. In the same way, that is the way for everyone. Why do they flame up? Because of causes and conditions from our past. So we have to understand that the defilements in our own mind and the mind of everyone else, in the moment they arise unsolicited, uncalled for. Is that true? Just think about your own, whether it's anger or fear or said it's like all of a sudden you're there. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, that's what he's saying. There's nothing deliberate about it. That first thought is the conditioned thought, the conditioned impulse. Oh, here he says it. Never thinking, now I will be angry, people are impulsively caught up in anger. Irritation likewise come, though never plans to be experienced. Okay? So when you set off to Publix, you don't think to yourself, oh, wonderful, I have some great opportunity here to be irritated. You know, looking forward to going to Publix, you know, great. I really hope there are a lot of people online and they all have coupons, you know, because I can love to be irritated. You know, you laugh, Tara, but it's true. You know, same way for those of you who have trouble with traffic. I mean, you know, you set out, you go, oh, it's rush hour. I'm going to get on 275 and just be angry and irritated at everyone. We don't think that way, do we? It just comes. That's what he's saying. All defilements of whatever kind, the whole variety of evil deeds are brought about by circumstances. None is independent, none autonomous. Conditions once assembled have no thought that they will now give rise to some result. Nor does that which is engendered think that it has been produced. This is profound. This is really Shantideva now revealing the heart of his teaching in terms of patience and anger and really all emotional afflictions. This is the core teaching of Buddhism. Cause and effect. It's also called dependent origination. Things, and I talked about it yesterday, remember apples and peaches? And right? Things cannot, peach trees cannot manifest without peach seeds. Right? They don't just magically appear. Everything we see in the universe has arisen from causes. When those causes come together, things happen. When those causes don't come together, things don't happen. Everything you see, every person you see, every, you know, animate object you see, inanimate is there because of prior causes. Is that clear? You know, why is there global warming? Just to give an example. Because, you know, the answer is what? Causes and conditions. Right? Causes and conditions. That's all. That's truth. It's not like it's just happening. Causes and conditions. That person who you were the victim of their anger, why? Why were they angry? Did they want to, you know, did they consciously say, I want to hurt you? For those of you who might have been the victim of parents, loved ones, did they consciously think, I want to do you harm? Or in the moment, did their causes and conditions manifest and they didn't have the ability to deal with them and work with them or transform them. So they what? Right. If somebody beats you with a stick, do you hate the stick? No. The stick is being wielded by someone. That person who said and did something, they are the victim of their own conditioning. And in their ignorance, they just pass it on. Is that clear? Now, again, this doesn't mean you have to passively accept it. Okay? So for those of you who are going there, don't go there. This is understanding. This is not giving rise to hatred and anger in yourself. Doesn't mean you don't deal with the situation, but it means you don't go down that road. Because when you go down that road of anger and hatred, are you at your most clear-minded? Do you deal with situations wisely and skillfully when you're angry? No. The truth, what often happens? When you're the victim of anger, somebody's got anger coming at you, you get what? Angered back. And then you say or do things, right? And then what happens to that person who's already inflamed? They get what? Yeah, so it's, can you see it? It escalates. We're just feeding the fuels of anger. In a sick way, sad way, we are nurturing that anger in that person. We don't mean to, do we? No. Because we also are the servants of our conditioning. Right? So we, and before you know it, boom, 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 boom. Before you know it, you are where? Where you want to be? No. That's why anger is so dangerous, right? It's so quickly can take us to such a bad place. Right? Anybody ever been in that kind of experience? Just like, whew, just in a flash. But he says this, she says that, boom, boom, before you know it. Whew. Conditions once assembled have no thought that they will now give rise to result. It's not a conscious, you see what he's saying? It's not conscious. Things just unfold very quickly from that initial, right? Take a little spark. Right? Little spark just arises. There's nothing around to burn. It just very quickly, what? Goes out. But if that little spark and you put a little paper next to it, little dry straw or grass, what happens? Begins to. A little more grass, a little more dump before you know it. Finds a dry tree. Before you know it, you have what? Forest fire. Started with a spark. But a spark that found positive causes and conditions to support its growth. And whether that spark is arising in us and we feed it, or whether that spark has arisen in another, and in our unskillfulness or unconsciousness, we feed it. Can you see? And in the most profound way, no one is to blame. Doesn't mean that we don't, in the realm of responsibility, that we have to take responsibility. But the truth is, everybody's just driven by their causes and conditions, aren't they? Yeah, so let's talk about this. All things depend on other things, and these likewise depend, they are not independent. Knowing this, we will not be annoyed at things that are like magical appearances. Thus, when enemies or friends are seen to act improperly, remain serene and call to mind that everything arises from conditions. Thus, when enemies or friends are seen to act improperly, remain serene and call to mind that everything arises from conditions. There it is. You know, we have the practice. He's given us the practice. So it's 11:53. So, I mean, this is very radical for most of us. I remember when I first read this, you know, 40 years ago, it was like, wow. You know, never in a million years would I have seen anger like this and understood it in this way. It's like so radical from the way we usually operate in the world. It's like a 180. So we have a few minutes. How are you doing with this teaching about anger? But everything arises from causes and conditions. It's not, another way to say it, it's we take it personally, don't we? Maybe that's in more the way we talk in our culture, we'd say we take it so personally, don't we? We don't see that their anger is coming from their own causes and conditions. It's not about us at all. And our anger is coming from our own causes and conditions. To say, you know, as we say, well, you know, you're the one who's causing me to be angry. Anybody ever said that? Right? You just shape up and do everything I want. I'd never get angry. We actually talk like that. Right? You know, you're the cause of my anger. Right? Just stop doing what I don't want you to do. Then there'd be no problem. The causes of my anger lie within my own mind that has been conditioned from the past. That is why anger arises. Yes?
Doesn't the anger often come from fear? Is that always the condition?
Again, you know, that's more psychological. And people have all kinds of ideas where anger comes from. I'm just going to stick with this, okay? Because I think this cuts across all those psychologicals. Does it come from this and come from that? It comes from our wrong, what in Buddhism is called wrong view. We don't see clearly, right? Okay, that's all, you know? And it comes from our egocentricity, you know, that we want the world to operate the way we want it to operate. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like that. Yes, you see, that cuts across it all. It's coming. You know, there may be all things that are conditioning it. You know, we have to. You know, I mean, we're just focusing on anger and irritation and patience. We could talk about fear. That's another. You know, but they're all the same. What are we afraid of? I mean, anybody here ever be anxious or anybody kind of anxious, fearful people? What are you afraid of? Well, no, you're not.
Things that happen the way I
want. Yeah. No, you think you're afraid of something that you imagine could happen in the future, right? It's, you know, fear is always future-based, and it's always about what? You can't control people's responses. They might not like me. Well, that's true. Do you like everybody? They may not think I'm the smartest, sharpest, you know, person in the room. Well, maybe you're not. And even if you are, they could think you weren't. You know, maybe I can't foretell the future and things may not work out the way I've planned. I mean, that causes people lots of anxiety. You know, like somehow we, you know, we're supposed to be able to, just because we make the plan on paper, it's supposed to always happen that way. I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? Life is life. Yes. Well, again, you know, the way we do this retreat, you know, I kind of come in and give the big picture. The other people, Angie and Brian and Betsy, I meet with them and they're going to be working. I mean, that's what hopefully happened yesterday. You did meditations based on what I had talked about. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, it's got to be practiced, right? But what I'm trying to say is, we need to get the big picture. What is your name?
Maria.
We need to get the big picture. You know what I mean? And this is big picture. Just to get what you just said. To know that everybody is the slave of their conditioning. From the top to the bottom. Right? You know, from the rulers of our world, you know, everybody is the process of their conditioning. Now, of course, at the same time, everybody has the capacity of changing, too. Or else it would be a terrible universe if everything was fixed. It's not fixed. But we cannot wait till everybody gets it. If we get it today, we have to begin the process of transformation within ourselves. Right? And part of it is kind of what I've shared today, to really... See, we have to realize that we are approaching, even if we think we don't have a philosophy of life, a way of viewing life, we do, right? And it's often distorted or skewed, you see? So what's been presented here is another way to look at life, what's going on in life, looking at self. You see what I'm saying? And to kind of get that view correct, well then... You know, inspire us, right? Like if you come out of this going, oh, you know, just to say, you know, anger's a poison, you know? It poisons me, and when I'm poisoned, I poison others. Right? To really recognize that, and to really be clear that in your practice of mindfulness, that you're going to be very aware when anger, irritation, frustration arise in you and immediately see that it is a poison. Right? Don't forget, even a little poison, if you take it every day, can have a cumulative negative effect on your body. You may not take enough poison to kill yourself, but if you take a little bit every day, it can be cumulative. And if we are nurturing the dissatisfied, discontent, irritated, frustrated mind, that will have a cumulative effect on our mind. obviously the most important thing is the cultivation of wholesome mind states. The patient mind, the understanding mind, the accepting mind is a wholesome mind state. Why is it wholesome? It feels good. It's kind of simple. It feels good. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, because he wasn't, because, yeah, the question is, when the Buddha awoke and realized that all the suffering of beings was self-created, you know, why wasn't he furious when he really saw what was going on? Right. Well, it's because he had understanding. He could understand cause and effect. He understood that people totally misperceiving life, misperceiving the reality of life, you know, create this, you know, delusive world in which they create pain and suffering to themselves and each other. He understood the cause. That is why he spent his life trying to show human beings another way. It's like a physician who all of a sudden understands that all these diseases that human beings are suffering from are all treatable. No, well, if you run into him, Robin, you let me know, okay? But actually, it was the opposite, Robin. In the story of the Buddha, it said that when he came to his great awakening, his moment of doubt was really, who's going to be interested? I mean, that's it wasn't anger. It was going, and in the text, you know, I mean, who knows what he really said, but the way it's presented is that the Buddha thought to himself, you know, sentient beings, you know, human beings, they're so busy with their toys. They're like children. They're so busy playing, and they're so busy trying to get ahead, and so concerned about their, you know, their thing. Who's going to be interested in this? Who's going to be interested? You know, they're so caught up in the small picture, you know, they're so caught up in the case by case, and it's very interesting. That was his doubt, you know, because remember, and I'm going to stop now. You know, we are told that the Buddha came to, you know, full great enlightenment. It was like total release, total bliss. He was just totally freed from all. And we know that for I think 7 weeks afterwards, he just reveled in that bliss. Okay, he just stayed and just reveled in that bliss in Bodh Gaya. And then he thought, and he began by thinking about his disciple, not disciples, these ascetics who he had been practicing with. He said, you know, and he realized, you know, he had left them, and he said, you know, they're just on the wrong path, you know. And he thought, you know, well, maybe I should. And then he had this doubt. Well, who's going to really be interested? You know, everybody's into their own thing. And supposedly, it was a kind of a divine intervention. You know, in some stories, it's Brahma, it's one of the Hindu gods comes to him. In another story, it's two Burmese traders human beings that he runs into. And basically, the famous line is, whoever told him said, yes, you're right. But there are human beings in this world where the dust of worldliness does not lie thick upon their eyes. Very beautiful. You know? Their eyes are covered by the dust of illusions and delusions, but it's not a thick dust. It's not a thick dirt. He said, so there will be people, you know, who will respond to you. And supposedly that said, all right, I'm up for the task. And then we know he just taught ceaselessly for 49 years. So, and here we are 2,600 years later. So we should be happy that he did it. So good, we will stop for today.